Welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest is Dr. Linus Pauling, the noted scientist and professor of chemistry at California Institute of Technology. He has become one of the nation's most controversial figures as a result of his activity in the campaign to discontinue the testing of nuclear weapons. Earlier this year, he presented to the United Nations a petition to outlaw further tests. His announcement said that this petition was signed by more than 9,000 scientists in 44 countries. Dr. Pauling has been quoted as saying that extensive damage already has been done by to human exposure by radiation. Among the many honors awarded to Dr. Pauling is the Nobel Prize, which he won in 1954 for his discoveries of the forces holding protein and other molecules together. He was awarded a Presidential Medal for his work for the government as a wartime consultant. His critics acknowledge his distinction in his particular field of science, but they have sharply questioned his qualifications as an expert outside of this field or in matters of military security. Seated around the press table, ready to interview Dr. Pauling, are Richard Wilson of the Coles Publications, May Craig of the Portland, Maine Press-Herald, Frank Conniff of the Hearst Newspapers, Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Dr. Pauling, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Pauling, I have here a copy of the petition which you sent to the United Nations, and in it you call for, and these are your words, a just and effective international agreement to stop bomb tests. You say this would be a good first step. Do you think that the proposal of the West made in August of 57 is a just and effective method of stopping tests?
Yes, I think that this would be thoroughly satisfactory if an agreement could be obtained about it. It was a proposal that there be a stopping of all bomb tests by all nations with a system of inspection, with some decrease according to specified plans, decrease in conventional armaments, and also with a stopping of further stockpiling of nuclear weapons. Now, this is just the same proposal as the Russians have made, except for the last one of these. The Russians have proposed that we stop the testing of all nuclear weapons with a system of inspection and with decrease in conventional armaments, too. I would be happy to see either one of these proposals made the basis of an international agreement.
Do you understand that the Russian Soviet Union has agreed to stop the manufacture, the production of weapons?
No, I believe that they have not. That the Russians have not agreed to stop the manufacture, stop further stockpiling of nuclear weapons. I would like to see this done. But most of all, I would like to see an international agreement made that would prevent nuclear weapons from being spread into the hands of further nations than the three that now possess them.
Well, now, if you think this, the suggestions made by the West were good ones, and the Soviet won't accept them, just what do we do?
Why, we try to arbitrate with them to find out what they will accept, that we are also willing to accept, that the British will accept, and the other nations. France is an important nation, because if we don't watch out, they'll be a fourth H-bomb nation, and the world will be in just that much greater danger. We arbitrate to find out what sort of an agreement can be made in the world as it is now.
Dr. Pauling, how do you arbitrate with a nation that won't arbitrate? How do you make agreements with a nation that has broken so many agreements? Isn't this the heart of our problem in dealing with the Soviet?
Well, the United States has broken many agreements too, international agreements, treaties. Nations keep agreements, keep their treaties, so long as they continue to do them good. We are in a position now where an agreement could be made that would benefit every nation in the world. Every nation in the world, every person in the world is in great danger now. Danger of destruction, annihilation by a nuclear war. Now that we have weapons that are 20 million times more destructive than the one-ton blockbusters of the Second World War, the whole world is in great danger. We're not safe. We're in danger now. I say, let's start making some agreements that will make the world a safer place, will make the United States safer.
Well, and everyone is in agreement on that. The problem is how to get an agreement with someone who won't make an agreement. Dr. Pauling, let me ask you this question. Do you think that the security of the free world is dependent upon the nuclear power of the United States?
Well, I think that we have to see to it that no one nation gets power of control over the world.
No, that wasn't the question. Do you think that at the present time, the security of the free world is dependent upon the deterrent power of the United States?
Well, the security of the world is dependent now upon the deterrent power of nuclear weapons, and we have the greatest stockpile of nuclear weapons that's in existence.
Now, are you suggesting that we, just as well as the Soviet Union, might conceivably start a surprise attack?
Surely, this is a possibility. All sorts of accidents can happen, psychological accidents and technical accidents. Surely,
you think this is as great a possibility that we might start a war as that they might start a war?
That's right, by accident. I think this is the way. You see, nobody is so insane now as to start a nuclear war. Everybody, practically everybody in the United States, practically everybody in Russia, practically everybody in Europe would be killed. A few people in New Zealand and Australia might survive, in South Africa and South America, Argentina. Nobody is insane enough to start a nuclear war now. We know what a nuclear war would do. If you've read the testimony about the analyses of what a nuclear war, a nuclear attack with 2,500 megatons of dirty weapons on the United States would do, 108 million people dead or seriously injured as a result of the first day of the attack, you know what this means. The only reason, the only way that a nuclear war will start is through accident, and we have to solve our international problems now, not by war, but by some other method. And we can do that by starting to make agreements. We'd better start out.
Mrs. Craig.
Dr. Pauling, you have been especially critical of the effect of the testing on the health of mankind. But I have quite a few citations here of others who disagree with you. Medical scientific conference in Switzerland, a report based on a study by the National Academy of Sciences and the British Medical Council. So you do admit that there's evidence on the other side, or at least opinion.
No, not at all. If you would make one specific statement, I would show you what is wrong with it.
Yes, sir. Time in April 7, last month, says that a nine-nation medical scientific conference in Switzerland says fallout radiation has no practical importance compared to national radiation and is not a danger to the health of mankind.
All right. This is quibbling. This is quibbling because they say it is small compared with natural radiation. Natural radiation produces 150,000 seriously defective children every year, and about 300,000 neonatal and embryonic deaths, and perhaps a million or more minor hereditary defects. Now,
well,
something can still be important that is smaller than that.
If you will forgive me for saying so, it seems to me there are equally eminent persons with yourself who do disagree. I assure you will admit that.
No, I don't admit it.
Not equally eminent?
No. Dr. Culp pointed out in his testimony last summer that what Dr. Libby says and what I say are in pretty good agreement so far as the facts go, but that Dr. Libby always talks about a small percentage increase, whereas I talk about the 10,000 or the 100,000 or the million seriously defective children who will be born, or the 10,000 people who will die each year of leukemia and bone cancer. These are just the same facts described in two different ways.
Sir, I don't want to get into the numbers game because, as I say, I have heard a great deal of testimony and read a great many articles on the other side. But I want to ask you this. You're taking only the humane standpoint, the effect on the health of present and future people of the testing. Are there not other factors to be considered, even admitting the danger, our need for clean weapons, small weapons, and also the need to keep abreast with Soviet Russia?
Well, now, suppose that I say something about clean weapons. This is just a fraud, this clean weapon business. The United States isn't manufacturing clean weapons and putting them into our stockpile because dirty weapons are far more efficient. In fact, if the people in the military and the AEC and the commander-in-chief himself were to start stockpiling clean weapons now, they would be guilty of malfeasance in office because they have the job of protecting the nation. You can take a clean H-bomb, 5 megatons that costs a few $100,000. For $17,000, you can make it into a 15-megaton dirty bomb that will do 3 times the damage and, in addition, have fallout, local fallout in the enemy country. The only analyses that have been made of nuclear war have involved the use of dirty weapons. There is no chance that clean weapons will be used in the attack on the enemy country. That's just a fraud.
Well, sir, do you think that you know more about it, not being a military man, than the President and Congress and our military?
Well, you see, nobody in this country has said that we would use clean weapons against Russia. And all of the discussion, the only statement that has been made about the use of clean weapons was that in having anti-missile missiles for use over our own country, if they were clean, then we would not be adding their radioactivity to the radioactivity of the dirty Russian weapons coming over.
Don't you think it's important to have clean bombs in over our own country and those of friendly countries?
Well, no. It's silly to have nuclear war at all. This has just ruled itself out. It is absolutely silly to talk about waging nuclear war when the estimates are that 2/3 of the people in the United States would be killed the first day, and similarly for other countries. This is insanity.
But maybe forced upon us.
Mr. Kniff,
no.
Let's move along, please. Mr. Kniff.
Sir, Dr. Pauling, it seems to me that the American public are anxious to get to the facts, but here we have just witnessed you downgrading the whole community of scientists who have disagreed with your point of view. Now, wouldn't the American people be more inclined to believe scientists of the caliber of Dr. Teller, Dr. Libby, who are not tainted, if that's the word I want, with a rather prolonged record of association with communist fronts and causes, as you appear to have been in the past?
Well, now, first, Mr. Kniff, let me say that you are wrong in saying that the whole community of scientists is against me. They're with me. And on the other hand, you have Dr. Teller. I would like to see what the scientific community feels about my standing relative to Dr. Teller's. You have Dr.
Sir,
Teller,
I'm...
Dr. Libby. There you are. You have 2 or 3 scientists as spokesmen for the AEC on the one hand, and they make statements that are not honest, outright, forthright statements. They make dishonest, untrue, misleading statements. They mislead the American public.
May I interrupt, sir? Wouldn't the American public, which, as I say, is anxious to get to the truth of these matters, doesn't the fact that you in the past have always rather mouthed the communist point of view rather than what has been called the free world's point of view, doesn't that influence them? Wouldn't it influence them to put more credence in Dr. Libby and Dr. Teller?
I deny that I have mouthed the communist point of view. I challenge you to prove that I have. Mr. Henning, Senator Hennings, said, well, what you have said, this was to a man who was testifying, what you have said is that the communists are following Dr. Pauling's line, which has sometimes happened, that the communists have followed Dr. Pauling's line. You know, in the field of chemistry, there's been a controversy. The communists have been attacking me since 1950 because they don't like my ideas about chemistry.
They haven't
been
attacking
you. I think they're getting straightened out.
Do you know of any attack on your political point of view in the communist press or by communist spokesmen?
I don't know. I don't follow this perhaps not so well as you do. You quote something.
Well, we have here a group of scientists at Columbia University who not only say you're wrong about the carbon dioxide, the carbon-14 put into the atmosphere, but they say you have misgauged it by 50 times.
Yes.
And now, allowing for a small margin of error, isn't that a rather wide variance, 50 times?
But they are wrong. I've sent a letter to the New York Times. Perhaps the New York Times will publish it, just saying they are mistaken. I was right. Here is Time, just this, the current issue of Time, in which it says, Pauling's estimate was 50 times too high. Pauling's figure for carbon-14 in the atmosphere, 10%. The Columbia figure, 0.2%. But the 10% is right. Dr. Libby himself has given the 10%. This is right. There you are.
Mr. Wilson.
Dr. Pauling, I would like to ask you if the following statement by Dr. Willard F. Libby, Commissioner of the United States Atomic Energy Commission, is true. First, as to radioactive fallout, the magnitude of any deleterious effects of radioactive fallout from nuclear tests is necessarily very small compared to such ordinary experiences as living on a mountain or in a brick or stone house, wearing a radium dial wristwatch, or taking x-rays. Is that a dishonest and untrue statement?
I think that there are some parts of this that are true, because natural radioactivity, as I've just mentioned, natural radioactivity produces about 150,000 seriously defective children each year in the world. And it varies quite a bit from one region to another. It may vary by as much as to produce an extra 10,000 if everybody were subjected to the amount of radiation you get from being surrounded by granite, say. And what I have contended is that the number of defective children caused by a year's bomb testing is of the order of 10,000, or perhaps 100,000, this order of magnitude. The wristwatch, I think, is wrong.
In that connection, I'd like to quote another statement of Dr. Liberty. It cannot be said that... let me read the entire thing. The effects of fallout radiation are in all probability deleterious, both to the health and genetically. But... this cannot be said to have been scientifically proven beyond doubt, since measurements have never been made on any animal or organism for the effects of radiation delivered at such low rates and in such small amounts as is that from radioactive fallout from weapons testing.
Good.
Is that a correct or is that a dishonest and untrue statement?
Yes. Yes, is the answer to that, because Dr. Libby knows that every geneticist in the world believes that the levels of natural radiation, which has then the fallout on top of it, that these levels produce mutations. Every geneticist in the world believes it. This is the standard sort of misleading statement that can be made if you want to fool the American people. That's what it is.
It's never been proved on any living organism.
That's right. And Kurt Stern, Professor Kurt Stern of the University of California, says it has never been proved that these levels of radiation cause mutations in human beings, cause defective children. But who is there in the world who believes that human beings differ in this respect from all the animals, all the plants, all the microorganisms that have been investigated, for every one of which you get these effects?
I'd like to ask you, Dr. Pauling, if it is not true that carbon-14, an isotope, a result of an atomic reaction called carbon-14, has been produced in the laboratory and elsewhere since as early as 1936.
Carbon-14 has been made in amounts of a few atoms since 1936 until the atom bombs came along. There was no amount that was worth talking about, no amount that came up to the millionth of a gram level until the H-bomb tests were carried out, and now it is being manufactured at the rate of hundreds of pounds a year.
Yes, sir. Now, you only discovered the deleterious effects of carbon-14, however, after they began to make clean bomb tests. I shouldn't say discovered. You only emphasized it after they began to make clean bomb tests. Now, why this long delay in recognizing the effects of carbon-14?
It wasn't until the 27th of March, 1958, 6 weeks ago, that the AEC released the information about it. And Dr. Libby, in his speech in Lausanne, said that the amount of carbon-14 being produced is 17 pounds per megaton, whereas in 1956 he had said 2 pounds per megaton. Now, the 2 pounds per megaton is presumably for a dirty weapon, for fission, whereas the 17 pounds per megaton is for fission and fusion mixed. I judge that fusion causes about 14 times as much as fission does.
Then your action with regard to carbon-14 was not merely for the purpose of discrediting the American clean bomb tests.
No, I hadn't known that carbon-14 was so dangerous, because I didn't know that so much was being made until 6 weeks ago, when Dr. Libby gave out this information upon which I was able to make this calculation.
Mr. Spivak.
Dr. Pauling, a minute or so ago, you said that the communists have followed your line rather than you their line. Did I understand you correctly?
I said that Senator Hennings had said that.
Well, but do you say that too? Senator Hennings.
Maybe that they have followed my line.
Wrong, might just have picked Senator Hennings because he said something you liked to hear him say. Do you think that the communists have followed your line rather than you their line?
It may well be that they have. I follow my own line.
You
Nobody
haven't followed
tells,
their line
I haven't
at all.
Followed their line at all.
Have you, for example, ever taken any part in anything towards the defense of American communist spies?
American communist spies?
That's right. The Rosenberg case, did you sign any petitions on the Rosenberg case?
Yes, I signed
or
a petition
Morton
on the Rosenberg.
Sobel? Why, as a scientist and as someone who's interested in peace, do you get mixed up in movements of that
well,
kind?
Well, one of the reasons that I'm interested in peace is that I'm interested
I'm not talking about peace. I'm
individual
talking about
human
this.
Beings. That I'm interested in individual human beings. That's why I keep talking about the number of human beings who die of leukemia
and
as a result
why
of
you
the bomb
came
test.
To the, is that why the, you came to the aid of convicted spies who were
convicted spies.
Yes. The Rosenbergs.
Well, I'm not sure that it's right to call them convicted spies.
Well, they were convicted as spies, and weren't they? They were done away with as
what
spies.
Were they, yes, but what
they were
for?
Executed as spies.
Executed for what?
Well, as far as I know, for treason, for giving away secrets
no.
to the United States.
No, they weren't.
Well, did you
they
or did you not?
They weren't even charged with treason.
Well, what were they executed for?
They were charged with conspiracy and were executed
Well, they were
for
executed
conspiracy.
For conspiracy. All
yes.
right, I yield to your exactness in this.
Yes.
You came to their aid.
Yes, that's
because
right.
you're interested in human beings?
That's right. I'm interested in human beings. I'm interested in the Constitution of the United States. I am interested
why do you
in
always seem
the
to be,
individual.
Why do you always seem to be interested in communist human beings?
Well, I signed a petition for Gerald H. K. Smith when he was denied the use of a hall in Los Angeles. I don't think he's a communist.
Would you have signed one for his freedom if he were arrested?
Yes, I think so, if I thought that he was arrested on an unconstitutional charge or not given a proper trial.
Doctor, how do you explain this thing, for example, this House Un-American Activities, which said his whole record indicates that Dr. Linus Pauling is primarily engrossed in placing his scientific attainments at the service of a host of organizations yeah. which have in common complete subservience to the Communist Party of the United States of America. And they list some 60 organizations and petitions that you
yes.
signed in the interest of the communist cause.
Yes. Not one of which was on the Attorney General's list, by the way. And this House Un-American Activities Committee never accused me of anything, never called me in. This is just an effort to keep the people from knowing what the truth is, to keep people like me from using their constitutional rights of free speech. I think this is scurrilous behavior on the part
Doctor,
of the Un-American Activities Committee.
Did you sign a petition against our policy in Korea, too, in 1950? Against our going into Korea?
I don't know. I'd have
there
to
There was a communist petition.
That.
Did you sign that, too?
According I didn't to the, sign any communist petition.
According
so
to the information
to
I have, you signed such a petition.
Mr. Would you like to answer that?
Sir,
I've just answered.
I'd like to ask a question again, Dr. Pauling.
Yes.
When one is associated as many times as you have been with fronts and with organizations that have been definitely plugging the communist line, whether it's your line or their line, it's
I
the communist
this.
Line.
Mm-hmm. I deny this.
Why is... How can you expect the intelligent American to draw any other conclusion but that you are interested in the communist cause?
Well, the intelligent Americans are the ones that I appeal to. Take the scientists, the American scientists. They are behind me 90%, 95% of them are behind me. They are intelligent Americans. Mr. Wilson?
Dr. Pauling, in connection with this signature of 9,000 that you got, scientists over the world joining you in your views on this whole subject. There are some people who say it takes a lot of money in organization
yes.
to get that money.
Let me answer that. I paid for it myself. I got the money.
How
my
much
wife
it cost?
And I, it cost about $600. We got those signatures for 3 cents apiece. Every letter that I sent brought back 10, 15, 20 signatures.
Then how does it happen that right the same day, the communist press all over the world blazoned this thing all
Mr.
over?
Mr. Wilson, I'm not going
the
to
newspapers,
be able to let
you... The newspaper services are good. You know more about that than I do.
We'll have to stop there. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
The subject of this interview program, Meet the Press, of course, is Nobel Prize winner Dr. Linus Pauling, professor of chemistry at the California Institute of Technology. Another of these stimulating and enlightening half-hour programs, Meet the Press, produced by Lawrence E. Spivak.